Hello, all you lovely people in internet land, and welcome to episode 112 of Game Life Balance Australia. I am your host, Robert Bailey, and I'm joined, as always, by a hyper-intelligent bear developed by the military, Andrew A.C. Yoshimura.
I ate them all. Look, you can make me as intelligent as you want. They just put a little bit too bear in along with the intelligence. And so I ate all of the scientists, and I ate all of the guns, and then I piloted a tank out of there. I was a very, very bad bear.
Exactly what happened with Paddington from that. Exact same thing.
Well, yeah, basically the same, except with more marmalade, I think. With me, with more anger and grenades.
Yeah, you can take the bear out of Peru, but you can't take the murderous bloodlust out of the bear. So that's fun that I'm sitting across from you.
Yes, this is,
but I'm used to that. I'm used to that because this is episode 112. We've been doing this for a while, AC.
I haven't murdered you yet. And I have to say, that is quite the achievement.
If we were doing this consistently, like every week or something, that would be 2 years worth of shows. But we've actually been doing this for 5 years. But we're still more consistent, AC, than our American friends across the pond.
Are they still alive? I don't think they're alive.
I think I saw signs of life a little while ago. I think I saw a twitch maybe from the corpse. It could have been a muscle spasm, you know, just the last embers dying.
Yes, well, they both have kids now. Some of them, I think both of them have several.
If anything will make the light go out in your eyes, it's having kids. They
had like two or three episodes late last year, and it's almost when this episode comes out, it will have been a year. Mm. So we're recording this in December. We've done 4 shows this year.
Yeah.
You know, we keep it quarterly.
Quarterly.
Gentlemen's Quarterly. That's what we do. I don't think that's that particular name has been copyrighted, so I think we can claim that one.
I think that's fair game.
Game Life Balance, Gentlemen's Quarterly. I can tell you all about the latest Amiga watches. And I will take my pants off for a photo shoot. I don't think that's what Gentleman's Quarterly is all about, but we're changing it.
I sort of thought it would involve a lot of smoking jackets and
Yes. I mean, there are a lot of half naked men in Gentleman's Quarterly, I think. You know, it's all about fashion, but then they're not wearing a lot. You know, I was just planning to have like a SNES controller squeezed between my butt cheeks and then call it a fashion shoot, but you know, I know?
Very erotic, yeah.
Speaking of erotic, perfect segue. Perfect segue into our game of the feature.
The featured garm. As we like to
call it. For December, for this Gentleman's Quarterly, it is Christmas. So we thought we'd have ourselves some anime ass cheeks and review Ghost in the Shell. Yes, today we are reviewing Ghost in the Shell, based off the very famous anime My Neighbor Totoro.
Yeah, it's weird, actually, because it's how do you get from a pleasant little sort of, you know, rural magical story to tanks moving through an urban environment and shooting things and having them explode, but I'm sure you can get us there. I'm sure you can bridge that gap.
Oh, no.
So Totoro.
Totoro is a tank.
The military captured Totoro, much like they captured you from your little cave in Peru. And they built it. They put him into a mech.
They fucking weaponized Totoro.
As the military is wont to do.
The terrorist Totoro. The terrible. There we go. The three T's. Every T you ever wanted. Piloted by Mr. T.
Let's put guns on that bus thing.
Now, that's a mecha. That's like an Ava.
Yeah.
Like some kind of cybernetic sort of monster.
Yeah, actually, it's kind of like alive in a weird way, isn't it? So it's almost like one of those angel things. Anyway.
This is Ghost in the Shell for the PlayStation 1.
That's right.
We know that there is a PS2 game as well, but this is for the PS1. Mm-hmm. And it is, of course, based off the very famous movie Ghost in the Shell, which was, again, based off the very famous manga. You know, the Ghost in the Shell movie really made it an international property.
Yeah.
So the PS1 game is a cyberpunk-themed third-person shooter. So you don't actually play as any of the main characters from the movie.
Yeah.
Although there are anime cutscenes in here, which are very, very, very brilliantly rendered.
They're kind of like high quality. For the era. Yeah, they're quite good.
Yeah. So you actually play as like one of the spider-like little tanks, usually... portrayed as kind of childlike and kind of a little bit innocent, despite the fact that they are killing machines.
Yeah, it's weird. Yeah, but there's little sort of baby tanks, like the because there was that big one in the at the end of the movie.
Yeah,
and then I think the fiction is that like they developed those tanks to use for like their own purposes or something like that.
Yeah. So this is although there are anime cutscenes, it's basically a self-contained game where you act. You are one of these small. I say spider-like. It's kind of like a crab in a lot of ways.
Spider-ish, crabish, sort of like a little bug of some sort. Because it, as we'll explain, it moves around like a bug.
Yeah, it's very skitter scatter. Over everything.
You can click. What's cool about the game? Well, one of the things that's cool about it is the way you traverse the 3D environment by like climbing up vertical surfaces and things like that as the little spider tank. So, yeah, you can like jump onto the roofs of buildings, but you can also just climb up the sides of you know, just literally like a vertical wall with the little spider legs, which is cool because you can, I don't know, it gets you into some interesting situations where you can move around the environment in a different way than most games.
Yeah. So the controls are fairly straightforward. Mm-hmm. You can use the left analog stick, although there is, you know, there's no aiming per se.
Mm.
It kind of aims directly in front of you and it will do the Doom vertical if there's something above you or whatever's closest to you, it'll kind of auto aim.
Yeah.
In a kind of more or less vertical fashion.
So the shooting's very simple in that sense because it's not, there's no real aiming happening at all, really. You're just aligning yourself with the enemy and then sort of shooting.
So you've got the directions.
Yeah.
You've got the grenade, which is the least used weapon because you only get two or three of those.
Yeah.
And then you've got your fire button, which is, you know, if you hold it down too long, it'll overheat and you've got to wait for it. So you just kind of tap on that button.
Like a machine gun or something. Yeah.
And then you've got the jump.
Mm.
Now, the jump is interesting because you're a skitter-scatter robot tank who kind of, like, traverses the environment and will just kind of go over things like a spider or a crab and just kind of, like, you know.
Yeah, just climb right up and over things like a little ant or something. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of cool. Very insect-like.
Mm.
But the jump button actually launches you into the air.
Yeah.
Like, several meters.
Yeah, yeah.
You can kind of, like, get over chain-link fences. It'll launch you a good... you know,
it's like 420 meters or something. I think it's pretty high. Like you can jump onto buildings. You can jump like pretty far. I don't know how the sense of scale in the game is weird because, like, you think you're in this big tank, but like the individual human soldiers that you're fighting are actually sort of taller than you. So that gives you some sense of how big you are. I suppose you're the size of like a, I don't know, like a large dog or something. Which, I don't know.
Yeah, you're kind of like half human size. Yeah. Like they show you in one of the cutscenes, like they're kind of about half the size. And you are smaller than a lot of the enemies. The enemies are fairly generic. You know, you got your men, your soldiers who
henchmen
who explode. You got your generic blue tanks when you're like an orange red kind of tank.
Yeah.
And then you got mines. You've kind of got like auto guns, and then you've got the big bosses at the end of each level, which are big tanks for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So this game took about 18 months, I want to say, to develop and was released in Japan in July 1997.
Right, okay. Yeah, so.
And in December in North America, 97, and then in July, 98 for PAL regions, so Europe and Australia.
So it did come out here. It's not one that I remember, though, but I mean, there were a lot of PlayStation 1 games back then.
Look.
You could hardly play them all.
I don't know. Look, a lot of the games that were released in Europe were just kind of shipped over here and they slapped an MA15 rating sticker on the front and they still just said all the British information on the back.
Yeah.
So whether it was an official Australian release or just to basically ship, you know, a few thousand copies over from the European nations, I'm not actually sure. It is worth saying that we did play the Japanese version.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everything, most of it is in English, though.
Yeah, like all the text in the game is in English. Yep. But, of course, all the voice acting and stuff is in Japanese, which is perfect, really, because best of both worlds, I think.
Yeah, it really is.
For me, anyway. For someone who doesn't speak Japanese.
No.
But, yeah.
It does give you a heads-up display. Yeah. So, it pretty much tells you the direction you need to go in and the targets you need to kill.
Mm.
We've finished a few levels of this game and we died on the bosses a few times.
Yeah. Yeah. They were a bit tricky. Well, the second one in particular, but yeah.
Yeah, it was, but it's a really fun, I'm not going to say totally unique, but it is a really good licensed game.
Yeah, it's interesting. It wasn't what I was expecting when you said Ghost in the Shell. And I think that might be the one thing probably holding it back a little bit is that it's maybe you might go in expecting to play as like the sexy anime girl from Ghost in the Shell or like the cybernetic eyes guy from Ghost in the Shell. I don't know the names of these characters. No. I'm so sorry to people who – it's probably a beloved franchise to many, but I'm disrespecting it here. But you know, it's sort of like if there was a Mickey Mouse game. Cool, I'm going to play as Mickey Mouse. And then instead you're like driving a tank. Like, what? it throws you a bit. But having said that, the actual – what they have got, like the game itself, is a fun game, you know? Like it controls pretty well. I enjoy moving around the world in the little tank and like jumping up onto walls and clambering over roofs of buildings. And you can kind of just jump from building to building and never really touch the ground if you want. And that just it's fun. You can do little tricks like there's helicopters on the first level and you can cling to a wall and like look up at them and then as they come over you can shoot them from below.
So
clever things like that.
Self a little bit of cover effectively. Yeah. And you can strafe. I'm using the bumpers, I don't think I mentioned that before.
Yeah.
And strafing is one of those really important things you need to do in open environments, and I always forget to do it.
Yeah, strafing is like that seems to be the thing, because you can almost move faster strafing than you can moving backwards and forwards. So you can kind of ice skate around level strafing and kind of circle around enemies shooting them and stuff like using the strafe. And it took me a while to get okay at it. I wouldn't say I'm good at the game, but like it, you know, within a few goes you get the gist of it, and then you kind of like Tony Hawk or something, it feels fun. It's easy to feel to get to have fun with it.
Yeah.
And then mastering it is tricky, it seems.
So this game is actually made by the same developers who did Jumping Flash.
Yeah, that's now, right.
Jumping Flash was one of the really, I want to say it was a release, or at least a PS1 release window game that really showcased the 3D environments.
Mm.
And you're basically just like you're jumping from like kind of platform to platform in a 3D environment, collecting things.
Yeah, a lot of the fun of that game was just moving around a 3D space because that was novel at the time. And like it felt cool to just jump really high and jump onto things. And so like today that game wouldn't sell well, I don't think. But back then it was just like cool. Cause like, wow, 3D world I can move around in. And I feel like this game is similar in a way.
The other one was a rabbit or a robot rabbit called Robert. I think it was.
Yeah.
Based
on me, of course.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. Based on my life story.
And this one, it looks like they used a lot of those assets in the 18 months since that game. And this was co-developed with Sony. And then that just worked really well for the series. I don't think this was a super popular game. I think this came out and people went, hey, yeah, this is pretty good. This is fun. In fact, a lot of places in the West, reviewers in the West called it the best anime-based game at the time.
Yeah, which is pretty high praise. I thought there were like a ton of anime games, but there was a few out, I feel like, that
there were quite a few.
Us could get our hands on. And
there were some. Yeah, there were, like, I think they released a Ranma half fighting game for the North American SNES, but it was, like, one of the bad ones because they released, like, four of those, like, three or four fighting games. And the last one they did was really good, but the one they released in Japan was not. In North America was not.
Licensed games are always a bit of a, like, throw the dice situation. Like, you never know when you get one whether it's going to be any good.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's true for Japanese games as well as Western. Like, it's just a thing with licensed games. Yeah. Sometimes people are lazy with it and they just put out some piece of crap and slap the license on the front. And sometimes people actually care about the franchise and they try to like do a good job with it. I feel like this is the latter.
This is definitely the latter.
But it's still funny because it's not, it's almost like they, I don't know. It feels to me almost like they built a tank game and then decided, okay, now we'll call it like Ghost in the Shell rather than like the other way around. But maybe I'm wrong.
I think like of all the ways they could have adapted that property, I think this is the best one because like you could have been staring at the main character's ass in
platformer
like
a, or something, a boring sort of 3D like shooter or something that wouldn't have been very good.
They could have done like a Tomb Raider knockoff.
Yeah,
I feel.
Yeah, that's probably where we would have gone, wouldn't it?
And it wouldn't have aged as well as this. Like this, you can tell is a PS1 game, but it's still fun to play in 2023.
Yeah, like it does. It plays well, you know. And the graphics are what they are. Like it's PS1 graphics, but Yeah, like the frame rate's good. You're moving around at a good clip. You're shooting stuff. It's a fun arcadey kind of experience, and yeah, it holds up because of the gameplay is so solid that the other things don't really like matter so much.
Yeah, and one of the good things about this game is that you can fumble your way through it.
It's not too hard. I feel like you could beat this if we sat down and really tried.
Yeah.
We got a fair way into it, but we didn't bother, like, completing it or anything.
No, I think there's only, like, 10 to 15 levels, yeah. And a lot of outlets said, it's a pretty easy game. But, you know, in 2023, going back to a PS1 game, that's kind of what you want.
Yeah. There are some, like, nice things that games today do that this game doesn't. Like, yeah. So if you're up to the boss and you die at the boss, you have to go back to the start of the level and work your way up to the boss again, which most modern games don't make you do that, apart from Dark Souls, which, you know, we can talk about that another time.
Yes,
but, like,
sure,
yeah. You know, generally speaking, that's considered like a design sin these days to make players work their way back up to the boss again. But, you know, this is 1997. So it's a while. It's 26 years ago. God damn, we're old. Holy crap.
Yeah, look, this is... It's a fun game. It's of its time, and it still has a place today, I think. It's never going to be re-released because it is a licensed game.
Yeah.
I think IG Productions, which is a pretty famous anime and software house in Japan, had a part in this, and getting all those licenses back together, especially for an international release, would just be impossible, I'd imagine. I could be wrong. It could be available on, like, Japanese... like on the Japanese PlayStation store, but I get the feeling that you know, it's just kind of something that
it's probably lapsed into obscurity a bit, really. Yeah.
PS1 games aren't hard to emulate these days, so given all of that,
yes,
would you recommend people play this game?
Yeah, kind of. Like, it's a bit of a, like, hidden gem is probably too strong a word. It's like a hidden, like, nugget, I guess. Like, what's, like, less good than a gem, but still pretty good? Like a hidden silver bracelet, still sterling silver, you know? Like, it's pretty great. You're like, huh, that's valuable. It's not amazing, but it's good. I'm glad I found this.
This game, I suppose.
Yeah, like, it's a good game. I think if you like Ghost in the Shell, check it out, because it's interesting from that perspective. Because it's sort of like a, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, extended universe kind of stuff for the Ghost in the Shell. Like, they have this. It seems like they created a bunch of new fiction for the game.
Yeah.
And if you like shooty, like, fun, fast shooters and stuff, then yeah, definitely. And also, if you have a fond memory of Jumping Flash, which I kind of do, then it has that kind of appeal too. So, yeah, a bit of a nostalgia piece. But if it ticks those boxes, then I would recommend it. Yeah. But, you know, again, I always say this, like, if it's not up your alley, then, you know, don't bust your hump, like, going out there to find it, because it's not that kind. It's not an important game like Super Mario World or something like that where everyone has to play it, you know.
No.
It's not that kind of a game, but it's cool. Yeah, I liked it. How about you, Ace Sumo?
Look, yeah, I would recommend, like, this is a bit of a weird one for me because I bought this game last time I was in Japan. And it's been sitting a pile of just PlayStation games, like, of all the other games that I got last time I was in Japan, like PS3, a few Super Famicom games, a few Famicom games, and just a few, like, other things that I got around the side, like handhelds and stuff like that. I just had a pile of PS1, PS2 games that I was eventually going to get around to, and then all of a sudden it was fucking December. And then a few days ago, I looked at that pile and went, why haven't I played these games? And I look back at my life for the past year and go, oh, yeah, I have been insanely busy.
Yeah.
But I went through and I played those games, and some of them were winners, some of them weren't, but Ghost in the Shell really stuck out at me. I'd heard it was good. And I went, oh, PS1, I don't have a lot of nostalgia for PS1, but I went in there and I went, this is really good.
Yeah.
And I like the original property that it's based off. So I just kind of went... Yeah, I played it for like a good hour, I think, and we played it tonight. We had a grand old time.
Probably a couple of hours or something. Yeah, it's good. Yeah, and it's fun.
Yeah, I think that's just what you want. If you want to go back to a PS1 era game and you like Ghost in the Shell, play this game. If you're not a fan of third-person tank shooters, you know, this one does control fairly well before analog.
Yeah.
Kind of really big, like twin stick.
The control scheme is good for what it's okay. You know, limited options they had. They did a good job with it.
Yeah, this is before, like, the twin sticks really came out. You can use the left analog stick, as we said, but
yeah,
you can't really aim or anything like that. That being said, if you like Ghost in the Shell, I recommend it.
So apparently this is a video game podcast.
News to me.
Yeah, I thought we were kind of a lifestyle, you know, just chat about what we've been up to with the girls. Spill the tea, I'd say.
With the girls. You
know, a bit of a fashion lifestyle. Beauty podcast, really, is what I was expecting Game Life Balance to be.
Hey, look, if you want to talk about fashion and watches, I can talk your ear off all night, baby.
Let's pivot into a watch cast.
Oh, my God. Can we do that?
Watch.
There's got to be a podcast out there called Watch. And they say it like that. They say, welcome to Watch.
Great. The latest news in the world of watches.
I have like 50 watches now.
How many? Do you literally have 50 watches?
1, 2, 3. I think there's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 12. Yes.
Wow. That's wild. We need to talk about that. We need to unpack that at some point.
Okay, I think we do. I am actually, I kind of
want to. You want your house to be like the house, like Doc Martin. Doc's house in the start of
Doc Brown. Doc Martin.
Yeah. I invented those great shoes everyone loves.
No, you just kicked me under the table, you asshole.
With my Doc Martens.
No, you wear Converse sneakers. He literally kicked me, listeners at home. He goes, yeah, Doc Brown, and then kicked me with his Converse, which I feel is like some kind of insult to shoes.
Yeah.
Like probably both Converse. I do actually own several pairs of Doc Martens as well. I do like my shoes.
Mm-hmm.
I do like my watches. I do like my fashion.
Mm-hmm.
It's so hard being handsome. Actually, I'm not handsome, and all the clothes and fashion and watches just kind of compensates for that.
Yeah. Well, my wife dresses me, so anytime that I get a compliment on my outfit, I'm like, great, I can't even feel good about that, because it wasn't even me that...
I like Ralph Wiggins. My wife dresses me.
Yeah, literally. Yeah. I'm basically a grown-up Ralph. Out in the world, trying to make it on his own. God bless him. Good luck, Ralph. We believe in you.
Look, he's a happy boy, yeah. Now, Ralph Wiggins. Yes. So, what has been happening in my so-called life?
Yeah, you've got a life. Why don't you tell me about that first, and then we can talk about the games you've been playing to avoid your life, or, what's the word, avoid?
Avoision. I say avoision. But you know what? I had a whole bunch of, like, sometimes I come in and it's going, oh my God, I've played no games.
Mm.
And this time, I've just kind of come in and it's going, oh my God, I've had no life. And it's not that I haven't had a life. It's just that my life is incredibly busy.
Bit of a blur.
Yes. I kind of, sometimes I look back at my camera roll and say, hey, you know, this will update me on what's been going on.
Yeah. That's a good idea. I should do that.
Yeah. Flicked through that. Like, what have I been doing? And it's like, oh, pictures of Lum.
Yeah.
For the Daily Lum. My grandma died. And that's been my life. Like, it has been an incredibly busy year this year. Yeah, my grandma unfortunately passed away. We will say she had a good innings at 91.
Yeah.
We actually planned to go up to her nursing home and see her and surprise her. And then she carked it a week earlier. Yeah. So
I'm sorry to hear that.
It was a – look, we knew it was coming at some point in the not-too-distant future. And, you know, I was quite close with her and wanted to see her one more time and wanted her to see May and Maria one more time. But unfortunately, we ended up using those days that we were going to stay up there to visit her as going up there for her funeral.
Right.
Effectively. So we already had accommodation, so that's one – good thing, convenient. I suppose, yes.
Sucks.
Yeah, so that was a bit of mistiming on us, but, you know, it is what it is. And, you know, I almost rushed up there, but she was unresponsive and there was no point at the end of the day. So that was a bit of sad news. Maria has been incredibly busy with work. So she has been working most Saturdays for a few months and has been working until about 9 or 10 at night.
That's rough. I'm sorry to hear that, Maria. That sucks.
Having a drink.
Well, instead of drink.
Yeah. I mean, she got compensated for it very well. But, you know, she'll never get that time back, I suppose.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. But, you know, the days in lieu and the bonuses she got will mean that, you know, more fun in Japan for us.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. So, yeah, more spending money, I suppose, as well. But it is a shame to, like, trade off. Because time with the family is precious, I guess.
Yeah, And my, you know, I've been on call at work a lot recently as well. So my work has been incredibly busy. I'm not allowed to talk about my work. Well, I could talk about it, but then I have to shoot you because that's the kind of the nature of my work.
It does make us seem, I must admit, it does make us seem like we have like some sort of like James Bond-esque work.
Yes, we don't. Like,
you know, I don't know about you, but I'm targeting drone strikes and fucking.
You know what, my
going through the back door is what I say every day.
Yeah, you see, the thing is like that my. Like, the security level of my job, I know for a fact, is a lot higher than yours in some aspects, but I'm a lot less excited about it. It has nothing to do with secret agents, I'll tell you that much.
No.
But I, you know, I've been on call, which means no drinking, you know, having the phone next to me at all times, having it on in case I need to go into the office and stuff like that.
Because who knows when crime will strike AC at any moment.
More like when the building will shut down and I need to go in there and turn it back on again.
It's inevitably some stupid system or something that's just tripped or something.
Yes, that's usually what it is.
But you have to be, you have to just treat everything like it's...
Like, I've got to be on alert at all
times. Yeah, exactly. Code.
Yes. Like, damn it, you just gave my job away.
Damn it.
Now I have to shoot you. God fucking damn it.
Wait.
Okay, cut that one out too. But now, me cutting that out won't make sense.
There'll be nothing left. I'll just beep it, I think. I'll beep it. I'll put a fun, like, a Ahuga car horn sound.
Yes, please beep that.
Yeah. I really hope I remember all of this.
This is, you need to listen to the podcast.
Like in like January when I finally edit this.
Because this is a holiday podcast. We didn't do Ghost in the Shell because it was a fun game. It's a holiday game.
That's right. It's everyone's favorite Christmas game.
You think of anime asses, you think of Christmas.
That's generally how it goes.
Yes. I mean, not, you know,
that in my church as well.
yes, the church of anime ass weeaboos.
Saint Weeaboo.
Indeed, the patron saint of anime. Weebus the Fourth.
Weebus. Right. Okay, I'm sorry I'm derailing this.
Okay, no. Derailing is good.
Your secret business.
God damn it. You're going to make me a target, and I'm really not a target. So, yes, we are going to Japan in about a week's time.
Mm-hmm.
We are recording this on the 8th of the 12th, mm-hmm. which will hopefully motivate Robbie Boy here to edit and get it out in some form.
I may find the time. I could probably find the time.
Just hack it together. Yeah. Tops and tails.
Yeah. Don't bother like editing it or anything.
No. No, you need to now because you're making my fucking job.
No need. It's fine. It's
fine. It's fine. I haven't actually said where I work.
It's probably, look, on the off chance that someone from your work does one day listen to this, we should probably.
I'll shoot them, okay? That's like the boop-boop code.
Yeah.
Okay.
Listeners, just so that everyone understands, AC is actually not going to shoot anyone that he works with. That would be a violation of the APS Code of Conduct.
It's a stretch. It's a stretch of the Code of Conduct. I'm not sure it'd be a violation of.
As we discussed earlier, you probably would get fired. You'd probably get, like, you know... You'd have like a performance plan or something, you know.
Leave with pay, and I'd be on probation for a while.
You kind of reduce the number of shootings that you do.
God. This is really depressing talking about.
So sorry. Okay. I don't know why I am just ruining today's podcast. Oh, wait, that's my job.
That is your job, yes. And you're the host. Like, you are the host of this. I'm meant to be the second banana.
Yeah.
But and you know, I'm meant to ruin it, and you're meant to keep me on track.
Yeah, I made this, and now I'm ruining my own creation, like some sort of sick artist throwing his...
You're some sort of Frankenstein, really.
Throwing my poems in the fire or something.
That's very profound.
Yeah.
That's actually a very you thing to do. And go and wake up the next morning and go, where are my poems? Oh, that's right, I was cold last night.
It was poetry. No firework, it was fucking poetry.
So, yeah, we are going to Japan. I'll talk about that after we get back. I am seeing a friend of the show and guest of the show as well, Elchon. Mm-hmm. Hopefully I'm going to see him. Fantastic. Things aren't working out as much as we'd planned this time. Mm. And we're going to have a few guests this time as well. And my schedule is now full. Like, I looked at pretty much every day is accounted for while I'm over there, which is good because I know I'm maximizing my time. It's also, I'm looking at this going, I am not going to get to relax until I get back from Japan, in which case I have to start work again.
Yeah.
It's kind of like having kids, but fun, but more kids, which is fun, but not as fun. And you're on holidays, but you have kids.
Having kids but fun is a great quote. It's a great quote.
Having kids is fun.
I just hope,
just not 100% of the
time.
Just
hope that May and Ruby never listen back to this podcast.
They know what they are. Having kids is fun, just not 100% of the time.
If my dad did a podcast, would I listen to his podcast? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. So I hope that that's the
way they feel. Can you imagine my dad and your dad getting together and doing a podcast?
It'd be even worse than ours, and that's saying something.
But in our group of friends, my dad is the butt of a lot of our jokes.
Sadly.
Not for any, like, nefarious way or anything like that, or, like, he was just a very kind of...
I don't know what he doesn't. He's not like a eccentric individual or anything like
that. No. Okay. So here's the best way to describe Dad. He's an asshole, but he's a good man. He's a very moral good man, but he's also an asshole. So it seems like a dichotomy, but you can be an asshole and still be a very good person, and that kind of describes the kind of person that Dad is.
Yeah, does the right thing, but is an asshole about it.
Yes. That is kind of like, and I've told Dad this before, and I said, well, you know what you are. You're an asshole. And he goes, oh, I agree, but you're a good man. And he goes, well, I can't argue with that, and I hate you for it.
That's the problem with the truth, is you can't argue with it.
Well, I mean, I'm probably the same way. I'm a bit of an asshole, but especially you.
You have asshole moments, I will say.
Yeah. That's what you pay me for.
I wouldn't say you are an asshole, but I would say you definitely indulge in assholery.
Look, it's genetic. Look, I would say the same about Dad. He's not like 100%. He's not asshole 100% all the time.
Mm.
He's not a one, a zero, and then just like an asshole with a percentage sign next to it. That's not the tattoo he has, as far as I know. He indulges occasionally, especially when in the garage and working on something.
It's funny.
Mm. Okay, so I'm going to get to the games that I've been playing.
Yeah, sure. Talk about the games, because heck, this is apparently a video game podcast, as we've discussed, too much to my chagrin.
Yes, and you have tried to worm your way out of it several times.
Yeah, I wish we could talk about something more fun, like, I don't know, gardening.
Gardening Australia, gardening AC and Rob.
God, can you imagine if...
Actually, there are so many things I could say right now, and I am not going to say them because you would need to bleep them out.
Oh, God.
All right, okay. I am actually going to talk about a big life moment that I had earlier this year. In fact, that's been going on for the past few months, and it is video game related.
Mm-hmm.
I have a large library of games.
Yes.
They cover a whole wall of what used to be my garage and now is called the Antiques and Collectibles Room because of a sign I nicked from Borders Bookstore when it was closing down. And earlier this year, I looked at my collection and I went, I don't play these a lot anymore. You and I don't do Bit Seizure, which was our YouTube show.
Yeah, we'd review retro games. Each episode would be a new retro game, yeah.
And we did that for 2 weeks, for years.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm not going to say we were terribly successful, but we had some successful episodes.
Yeah, like, it was a lot of fun. And I think we got pretty creative with some of it.
Yeah, we did.
Better or worse.
And we did some terrible games. We did some good games. And we did some esoteric, really weird Australian games as well. We did a lot of HES games.
Yes. Yes, we were your home for HES content.
I got recognized in the street once for that. HES is like a bootleg Nintendo supplier in Australia called Home Entertainment Suppliers to sound like NES.
Mm-hmm.
HES, NES.
Yeah, close enough. If you squint, the H looks like an N as well.
It kind of does, yeah.
You can trick someone.
And people were obviously tricked in the past because we got our hands on these games.
Ah, the Bimtendo seal of quality, I see. Very good.
I think some of them did have a seal of quality. The HES seal of quality.
It's not worth the glue it's sticking into the back.
And the glue wasn't very good because half the labels fucking came off. They actually literally have like a vault.
Yeah.
Like a keyed vault of HES titles.
And they kept in the vault for a good reason.
Yes.
Because if they got into the wrong hands.
They could be very, very dangerous. I think if you have watched Angry Video Game Nerd,
yes.
A lot of those off-brand NES games he did, like Little Red Hood,
yes.
Were released in Australia by HES. So that's kind of what you're dealing with here.
That's sort of like a grey market for NES games.
Oh, no, it was basically black market. Yeah. There's not a lot of grey there. It was the illegal end.
You have to jam one legitimate cartridge into the top of the weird HES cartridge and that kind of all that kind of nonsense, that malarkey.
It was weirdly sexual. You needed to have a real Nintendo cart and a fake Nintendo cart to get it to work because it overrides the lockout chip.
It's amazing.
So yes, I looked at my collection.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, I don't play these games a lot. we don't do the podcast as much as we do, and there are lots of different ways to play these games, and the retro gaming market is quite high at the moment. So I thought,
maybe now's time.
Now is the time. I decided to sell a big chunk of my collection. Yeah, I sold about 3/4, maybe more, of my NES games.
Mental. Yeah, it's a huge, huge library that you had.
Especially in Australia, because the NES wasn't as popular as the Master System. I sold about half, maybe a bit more than half of my Master System games. I sold about 2/3 of my Mega Drive games and about 2/3 of my Super Famicom and SNES games.
Amazing. Yeah.
And I also sold like the consoles because I have spare consoles. I didn't. Because I had copies of consoles that are just sitting in boxes, I sold those as well. So I still have the main ones underneath the TV. I didn't sell any of those.
Yeah.
So I still have one SNES, one Master System. I think I still have two Master Systems, actually. Mm. One NES and one, like, Mega Drive and, like, Mega CD. Actually, you know what? The one console I did get rid of completely was the Mega CD. Mm.
Yeah, you won't miss it.
No, that's the thing. I looked at that and I went, I'm just never going to play any of these games again, except Sonic CD, and I have that, like, that's on a compilation disc for the PS2, so.
It's a fascinating thing from a nostalgia or history of video games perspective.
Yeah.
Like, so from that perspective, it's cool, but when the hell are you going to want to, like, most of those games are not great. Like, yeah, Sonic CD stands out as, like, that's actually a fun
video. That's probably the best game. Like, you and I played that quite a bit.
Because they didn't fill it full of stupid FMV and all this nonsense they were doing.
They just filled it with really good music.
Yeah.
Like, that was the kind of the point of that.
Yeah.
Oh, and some cutscenes, like some really good cell animated cutscenes.
The multimedia era was just terrible for games. Terrible. Yeah. Anyway.
So, at the end, I sold that, and I'm kind of up to, I think the last thing I'm still kind of going across my library. And I thought I'd have so much more room on my shelves. And I put some Urusei Yatsura Lum stuff on one shelf, like one column.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I just spread everything out because it was jammed in there before. And now I still have no space. However, I did make over $3,000.
Nice.
In that. And I certainly didn't spend that. Like, the hobby was kind of self-sustaining because I still sold, like, big ticket items every now and again. You know, I don't regret any of it.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't sold my complete collection. Like, I've still got the stuff that I still care about.
Mm-hmm.
And I've still got some big ticket stuff just in case.
Yeah.
But there, you know, I sold it to, most of it went to one guy, a local collector, who was really happy to have my collection. And, like, he would come over and we would just chat for hours.
Yeah, that's cool. You know, he loves games. That's, you want to get a good home, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and I'm sure one day he will, I think he's got a garage full of it too.
Mm.
He'll have it for a while and then he'll probably sell it on too.
Yeah, that's the way it goes for these things. But it's cool. It's a cool hobby, and I'm glad you kept like the good stuff.
Yeah.
Cuz like I think you're right. Like we were not using the potential of all of that stuff. You know, we weren't getting the use out of it. Well, certainly I wasn't, certainly, because I wasn't here very much.
I played every game that I bought.
Yeah.
At least once. Yeah. And some of them were terrible, but a lot of what I got was in bulk. And I did buy some individual ones and stuff like that, and it was always give and take, and then I'd sell something. And I just decided just to make some more room in my life.
Yeah.
Because, as I said, I'm collecting watches now, and I've always had an interest in watches, so that's kind of become a bigger focus.
Hmm.
And there are lots of ways to play 8 and 16-bit games.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, with all the, there's so many, like, with the
FPGA and emulation, it just comes so far now. It's just like, I'm looking at that collection going, I do like original hardware, but I don't need it as much as I used to.
Yeah. It's almost like a luxury thing to sort of play the game in its original sort of.
And, you know, there are some things, like, I'll keep my Virtual Boy, despite the fact it's a piece of shit. I will keep my Vectrex because it is a unique console, and I love handheld, so I haven't really sold any of my Game Boy stuff. So that was a big life moment for me, and it's been several months, and I don't regret it. So I think that's pretty important that I made the right decision there when the market was good. And it wasn't an investment in the first place. I didn't get these to sell them.
No.
I just got in, and then I just, you know, sold at the right time, I guess, at least for once in my life.
Nice.
Okay. I'll talk about two more games quickly. Tears of the Kingdom.
Yeah.
Zelda.
So you beat, because we were playing it last time we spoke.
Yep.
So how's that going?
I did not finish it, and I have given up on it.
Oh, yeah. Did you get that thing where you kind of get bored of the game before you beat it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Look, it is a fantastic, phenomenal game, but I'm not in the same place I was during the first game.
Yeah.
Like, this is bigger. And, like, I was getting through some of the bosses and some of the areas, and it was telling me to go here and do this. And I kept playing it less and less and less. And then for the first time, I took the cartridge out of the slot and I just never put it back in.
Yep. Yep.
And that's just what happens. And that's okay.
To me too, a lot, if it makes you feel better. That's happened to me with Red Dead twice. For the same reason. It's like, it's such a huge game. You get overwhelmed and you kind of get sick of the gameplay before you... Or not sick of it, but you're like, okay, I know what this game's going to be like. And if I spend 20 more hours, it's going to be like that.
There's no difficulty settings and it does not respect your time. And I don't have time for that.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it was so much fun. But it like, as popular as it was and how much everyone loved this game, it didn't have quite the zeitgeist that Breath of the Wild
had. No, it didn't have the same impact. I think it's just, that's sequels, isn't it, you know?
I mean, like, it was just the original, like, they built on it more, and technically it's a better game, but when Breath of the Wild came out, it was something else. Like, it was...
Real moment.
Yeah, it was a real moment in time, and people couldn't stop talking about it, and people have kind of... I'm not going to say moved on, because a lot of people loved it, but that's just the way it is. There's a new WarioWare game out called Move It, which is, like, kind of a successor to the Wii WarioWare, so it's all motion controls. I've been about halfway through that game.
Okay.
It's a lot of fun. It's all better than WarioWare altogether, or whatever it was called. That one that made you play in very specific ways and just wasn't that great.
Yeah, yeah.
And the last game I'll mention is my game of the year, and I want you to mention what your game of the year was as well. It doesn't have to be from this year.
Okay, just the one that you've played this year that you liked the most.
Yeah, the one that you liked the most from this year. This just happened to come out this year, and that is Super Mario Wonder.
Right, okay.
So this is the new Super Mario game, 2D, and it's a very bold claim for me, this is the best 2D Mario game since Mario World.
Oh, wow, that's huge. Yeah, I mean... So, better than all the new Super Mario Brothers stuff and all that. Yeah, cool.
Yep. I mean, the new Super Mario Brothers stuff I do like, and I've played a lot of it. I think I've played all of it, in fact. But WarioWare, I'm looking at my notes. Super Mario Wonder does almost something different on every level. You get this Wonder Seed and it changes the perspective, it changes the music. All of a sudden you're in an overhead perspective, or all of a sudden there's like a big boss, or all of a sudden you're on a magic dragon, everything gets trippy. All of a sudden all the piranha plants are singing. Everyone's seen that one on YouTube or TikTok or whatever. And it's just such a fun, enjoyable game. I was finishing this game thinking, I really want to play this game again. And I haven't felt that way about a Mario game for such a long time. I think the one game that I did go back and play again was New Super Mario Brothers the original New Super Mario Brothers.
For the DS.
Yeah. I think I did go back and try and get all the coins and stuff like that and try and find all the secret exits.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah. Because that was so, it felt so good to finally have another 2D Mario game after so long.
And it was a good game. Yeah. Like, I'm not going to say it was a perfect game, but it was that at the time, that was probably the best 2D Mario game since.
Well, yeah, there hadn't been one because they'd been doing 3D stuff for so long. And it was like, oh, thank God. Everyone had been asking, like, please just make a 2D one. And they finally did. And everyone was like, thank you.
It was so big in Japan. I was living in Japan when it came out. I didn't play it straight away. It wasn't until, like, I got a DS and my friend and Il-chan gave me his copy. I said, hey, this is really good.
Yeah, some people don't like it, but like purists or something, but I don't get it because I really like Mario. I felt that it felt like a Mario game. I don't know. I don't get why people don't like it. But anyway, that's just.
Yeah, so I went through all this entire game. Playing as Princess Peach.
Oh, really?
Now, you don't float like you do. I haven't actually played, because every time I have the option of playing as Princess Peach in a 2D game, I play as Princess Peach.
Well, because she's got the advantage with the float and stuff.
Yeah, she doesn't have the float in this one, and you do get weird, interesting powers, and Elephant Princess Peach is kind of adorable in a chunky way.
Awesome.
It's kind of heebie-jeebie, or she says something when she turns into an elephant. It's kind of cute.
And it reminds me of like a Shantae, turning all the different animals and stuff like that. Yeah.
So I will say Super Mario Wonder, if you haven't played it, it is fantastic. It is just a joy. Sometimes you just – I'm not saying it has the best graphics or the best story because it doesn't really have a story. It's defeat Bowser in a new kingdom. Whatever. Same story as always.
Yeah.
Not the best graphics, but the graphics are still very good for what it is. It is just a joy to play. Mm. It is just pure, undiluted gaming fun. Nice. And after you come something out of like Tears of the Kingdom and other like really super serious games, like just going into, hey, this is a gamey kind of game that games its game.
That's the kind of games you love the most as well.
It is. Yeah. And
a video game ass video game.
Yes, and that's exactly what Super Mario Wonder is. I am refraining from playing it again through as a different character just because I don't want to spoil it again so soon. Like I know I'm going to play it again, so I'm just going to take my time on that one. Yeah. I'm just going to wax on, wax off.
Savoring it. I love it. That's a sign that you've enjoyed it.
I have completed it, and the last stage is a lot of fun, and there isn't like a big surprise world after that, kind of a spoiler, but that's kind of a good thing because that's kind of what makes it Super Mario World.
Mm.
Like you kind of go all around the edges and then you go into the middle.
Mm.
That's what kind of made it that Super Mario World-esque kind of game.
Yeah, yeah.
So, when I've had my way with that game, I'll probably lend it to you so you can wax lyrical about it.
Yeah, that sounds great. I'd love to play a new Mario game. I've been playing some with my my daughter, actually, myself.
So, with that out of the way, I've crapped on long enough. I believe you have some stories to tell me.
Yeah, sure. So, yeah, I have been playing more Silent Hunter 3. That has been probably the main game I've been playing. I have been playing other games, AC. You'll be pleased to know.
Okay, yep. Not going to judge you too harshly.
I feel like Silent Hunter 3 will be my game of the year, which is funny because it's an ancient game.
Was it 2005 or something?
Yeah, 2005. But see, I found out a cool thing is that one way that you can get this game and get it running on a modern computer very, very, very easily is this thing called the One Alex mod. It's not really a mod. It's actually the whole game and you can just download it. But they say it's basically someone just modded the game a lot, then put the game folder on a download server so you can just download their modded version of the game, and they've added their own mods to it as well that they created. What that means is that you just download this game and fire it up and it runs in widescreen on a modern computer, like boom, off you go.
But so you've already paid for this game, haven't you?
I paid for it, yeah. And you know, I went through this very I explained last episode, I went through this very torturous process of getting the game to run on a modern computer, going through all these weird forums with beardy old submarine simulator guys on it.
They're all beardy.
Yeah, for some reason they'll have beards. Look, I'm also
me too, yes.
Follow the trend. But then I realized, oh my God, I can just download this thing. And if I'd realized that sooner, it would have saved me a hell of a lot of trouble. And it looks really cool because he's added a lot of visual mods and stuff to the game that I didn't bother adding. So the game looks fantastic. I'm playing it a lot now, and it just looks so much better. Like new models for all the boats. All the ships, the water looks better. The weather, all sorts of gameplay improvements and stuff. So that's my advice. If you want to play this game, if you're listening to me and you're like, "Man, this sounds like fun," then get the One Alex mod because that is the easiest way to get the game up and running in 2023. Pro tip.
So the question on everybody's lips, Rob, are you a Nazi still?
Look. The game.
It's a good question. It's a fair question.
You can only play as the Germans in this game.
Okay.
So that being said, I'm interested in getting Silent Hunter 4, which is set in the Pacific, and you play as an American submarine.
Okay, so you're not the Japanese in that one.
Yeah, yeah. So in that one, you sort of get to play the side of the Allies, which I suppose you know might be a nice change from being on the Nazis all day long. but yeah, it's been super fun. You know, like it's just amazing moments happen in the game. It's great for emergent gameplay, you know, because they set up this world with all the convoy routes and ships moving around and military operations happening, and then you just go out into that world and bump into things essentially, and amazing things happen, you know. So I don't know, there's a few different stories I could tell, but I don't want to take up the whole podcast. There was one time I was moving through, the U-boat was in the North Atlantic, and we were moving through like a big fog bank, and I was just because of the lack of visibility, I turned like the speed of the game. You can sort of speed up the game so the time elapses more rapidly. Yeah, but I turned it down a little bit just because, like, I don't know, on the off chance that we run into something. But you never run into something in a fog bank, except for this one time that I did. And I was just moving through the fog bank, and then all of a sudden, my lookouts on the conning tower shouted out, "You know, ship sighted!" And I was like, "What?" And then I looked, and it indicated that it was like a British merchant ship just emerging out of the fog. This giant merchant ship. It was so cool to see it. Like when I went to like the external view of the sub, because we were on the surface, you know, just cruising along. And then all of a sudden, this giant merchant ship just emerges out of the fog. And they were arming their ships at this point in the war, the British. They'd put a couple of old, like, World War One guns on merchant shipping.
That makes sense, yeah.
Just to kind of deter submarines from attacking them on the surface, basically. Because
they weren't meant to attack them or something. There was meant to be some sort of...
It's complicated, yes.
Yes. Nobody ever recognized that.
What you're supposed to do, according to the rules of war, the laws or whatever, was... if you're attacking a merchant ship, you're supposed to stop the ship, like, you know, signal to them, you know, hey, I'm an enemy ship, I'm an enemy submarine, get off, you know, and get everyone gets off the boat, and then you're supposed, and then you sink it. Or if it's a neutral vessel, you're supposed to sort of search it for, you know, war supplies, and if it's carrying war supplies, then you can sink the boat. But what happened was, because the British started doing these tricky things where they would arm merchant ships with hidden guns. When a German submarine surfaces and says, "All right, everyone, you know, hands up."
now let's all be good sports about this.
Right? Then panels open on the merchant ship, and the guns are sort of pulled out, and they start shelling the submarine. So because the British did that stuff, the Germans were like, "Well, we're just going to start shooting you,
regardless.
we're not going to wait. We're just going to like shoot you without warning." Now, because you can't, you know, it's sort of...
It's basically, I lied, yes, but I lied twice. And they go, "Oh, I didn't think of that."
So effectively, there's a few other things too, where there was an incident where a U-boat captain sunk a passenger liner and then felt really bad for all the passengers and organized like lifeboats for them. And then he was like towing them back on his U-boat. Sort of remarkable act of humanity in the midst of all this horror of the war, you know.
Mm.
And then ironically, like... they got attacked by Allied aircraft, and the life rafts got like shot up by Allied aircraft.
Oh, God.
Because the Allies were like, they knew that they were, you know, civilians, but they were like, "Well, it's a chance to kill a U-boat, so we're going to take it." So they tried to sink the U-boat, and they ended up detaching the life raft and saying, "See ya," because like they're going to kill us. So they
left
them to their devices. Most of the survivors got picked up by American or British shipping. But the point is that made the German submarine decide when they, you know, issue an order saying you're not allowed to help people anymore.
Yeah.
So that ended any possibility of people being gentlemanly at all. You know, so essentially you're sinking civilian ships, you know, without warning, and they're all going to drown unless they can get
to the lifeboats. It was basically the end of mass moustache twirling war.
Yeah.
Kind of like, "Oh, yeah, it's a good show, old chap. We'll show you some respect there."
Came quite brutal, you know. Yeah. And one thing with all the mods they've added now is that it has lifeboats and things. So, because before when I sunk a ship, it would just go down. But now, depending on how long it takes to sink, you'll see life rafts and people floating in the water with like vests and stuff or clinging to debris and things like that.
Yeah.
But if you sink a ship really rapidly, like if you just explode it, then like there's no chance for anyone to get off the ship and you won't see life rafts and stuff like that because it's just like they're all dead. But a few stories, that ship coming out of the fog was crazy. Like because it was about 400 meters away from the U-boat and I was like, "Oh my God." So I immediately dived and went under it and then shot it with my stern tube. You got one torpedo tube out the back of the U-boat.
Oh yeah.
So I sort of it was coming and I was coming along. I don't have to, this is a podcast. I can't show my hand movements. But you know, I was kind of perpendicular to it as it emerged from the fog and I went under the ship, came up on the other side of it and then shot it from the stern tube and got it. But that was just very exciting because like, "Oh my God, what the hell is a ship?" And then like I had to very quickly set up a torpedo shot without much time to like judge the angle and all of that stuff. So that felt good. But the biggest recent success I had that made me like literally fist pump was
go Germany.
Right.
No, wait.
Hooray! This right will last for 1,000 beers. Anyway. Oh God. A little piece of my soul died. So there I was in like the sort of mid-Atlantic off the coast of Africa and the Allies didn't have as good protection for the shipping down there because they were really focused on shipping from America to Britain.
Yeah.
So I came across a convoy that was just – it was four merchant ships with one little destroyer leading, and they were in a line with the destroyer at the front and then these four ships trailing behind it, you know? So I was like, oh, cool, easy pickings. So I went up and I shot, I wasted a bunch of torpedoes and missed a lot. And then I, with the last ship in the line, I hit it, sank it, but then the destroyer came around and started like depth charging me, and it was a horrible experience. I had to sort of dive down deep and silently move away while it was depth charging me and listening for me. And then once it had given up and buggered off, I decided, right, I'm going to go back and follow them and go back for another go. So once they were out of visual range, I surfaced the boat and sort of kept out of visual range and circled around and ambushed them again. I sort of sped up and overtook them and set up another ambush.
Did you get them this time?
Again, I only managed to hit one ship again, and again the destroyer came and attacked me. And I was like, God damn, this is so annoying. And then I decided to myself, right, next time I'm going to come up against this convoy, I'm going to try and kill the destroyer. I've never tried doing this before because shooting warships is difficult, and if you don't want to piss them off, basically, like,
no.
It's easy to shoot the merchant ships and then just flee, you know, because if you miss the shot, they're going to come for you, and I'll know exactly where you are. And but yeah, I decided to give it a go because I felt, well, if I shoot the destroyer, then there's nothing protecting these guys, and I can just wipe out the rest of the and just wipe out the whole convoy, you know. So yeah, I was lucky because the next ambush, just destroyers that are like protecting a convoy often sort of zigzag in front, which makes them hard to predict their course. It's really hard to hit them with torpedoes.
Yeah,
and they do weird things. Like they'll just do anti-submarine patrols around left and right, and so they're hard to pin down. But at this particular moment, it was just in line with the other ships and moving perfectly straight, and it just was the exact right time. So I shot it. I actually got up to about 500 meters away from it, just moving really, really quietly, just because I positioned myself ahead of them, very far ahead. So the whole time they were coming towards me, I was creeping up to my firing position really quietly, like only doing like 50 RPM on the propellers, like very slow. Fired three torpedoes in like a spread at the destroyer with like 2-degree spread between each torpedo. So they kind of come out like a shotgun shell. Like, blast, like boom, three spreading, almost like a shooting game where you get the spread shot, you know?
Yeah. Underwater contra.
Even if this guy sees the torpedoes and starts to like dodge, one of them is going to hit him.
Yeah.
So two of them hit the destroyer right in the middle of it, blew it in half. It exploded, this massive explosion. Like all the ammunition must have gone off because it like, that they actually model like where's the gas, where's the ammo in the ships. And if you hit that particular part, it'll start a fire or make an explosion.
Pretty good AI. Pretty good design.
It just blew the ship in half. This massive explosion. It literally like blew it in half. And I was just like, yes, because I've never like killed. It felt really good after that motherfucker had been depth charging me for like hours and like stressing me out, you know, almost killing me. It felt really good to strike back and like get, it was like, it's like a criminal killing a cop or something like that. You're like, yes, you know, like take that. not that we should, I don't support killing cops, but it was a great moment for me because I've never had the guts to attack a warship before. And then, yeah, then I had free reign to kill the other two. So I just because they're defenseless now, the merchant ships have guns, like those old World War One guns that they just strap on, but they don't have depth charges.
Not very good underwater.
They can't attack me at all underwater because they don't have depth charges. And they have no hydrophones either, so they can't hear where I am. Like the way you find a submarine, well, they call it passive sonar. Americans call it passive sonar, but essentially just a big microphone that you stick under the ship and you rotate it around, you know, like a directional mic.
Yeah.
And when you hear, you know, chugging of an engine, you know, okay, well, there's a ship roughly that way. And you can tell how far by how loud it is kind of thing. But they don't have any of that. So, like, I just get free reign now to just set up perfect torpedo shots. And I think with the last one, I decided to surface. I surfaced in front of them. They had a gun, but it was only – they had one gun at the back of the boat. So I decided to surface it in the front because they can't traverse the gun around to the front of the boat. So I just shot it with my deck gun. So just firing, like, 8-centimeter shells into it until it exploded and sank. So I wiped out the entire convoy, which felt – really cool. I've never done that before.
So has this been all in one go?
That was in one patrol with my current captain, Arno Asberg.
He's a real Asberg.
The game auto-generated that name, and I was like, that's great. It's like A-double-S-E-B-U-R. So Arno Asberg having a pretty good time. The previous career though I had.
So is very... are you still on this same character? The same captain?
Oh yeah. So I started. So the first character I had, the first really successful character I had that went well, and I retired him without him being killed or anything.
Oh really?
Fred Fox.
Of course.
Great German name. We had that was early in the war. Like, I started at 90. I started actually like 1 week before the war started. With that character. So he played from 1939 to like mid 1940 or early 41. Then I switched to a new character and I based him off one of the officers that was in that boat. I made up this fiction in my mind that like, oh, so that officer is now getting his own boat to command. So I'm going to continue like the story with this guy who was like Robert Emmerich. And I was like, oh, he's got my name. So, you know, he's my namesake, Robert. So our first patrol out, we went all the way across the Atlantic and we were off like the coast of Newfoundland and like Canada, where like because at this point in the war, the Americans hadn't joined the war yet. So all the supplies from North America were coming through Canada.
Yeah.
And
if there's anyone that deserves to die in the war, it's goddamn snowbogans.
With their milk baggers. Anyway, I found a convoy. And again, I did that same thing I did before where I would like attack it, you know, and then slink away and then come back and ambush it again and just keep coming back. And I had a really close call with it, had a few torpedoes left, and I was like, I should probably just head home because I'm so far away from Europe. And, you know, my fuel's at 50%. I should probably just head home. And if I find something else on the way, I'll just use my torpedoes on that. But then part of me was like, no, the aggressive spirit of the German Kriegsmarine are going to attack, you know, like.
Are you being slow confirmed? Because that's what this game sounds like it's kind of fucking doing, do you?
I was like, I have to attack. Like, this is like we're here to sink British ships or Canadian ships, whatever, that's what we're gonna do. You know? So I went back for one more bite of the apple, and man, I regret it so much. So because I had a chance to go home.
Yeah.
I had a moment, and I literally was plotting the course home on the map. And I was like, no. Go back for another bite, you know.
Germans never surrender. Oops, I probably should have turned to hell and run.
And it was, you know, in retrospect, it was just a bad idea because it was broad daylight, really calm seas when I attacked, which is, it means it's really easy to spot your periscope, you know. And I did something silly, like I set myself up right at the convoy was coming towards me. And rather than coming in from the side like I normally do, I decided to kind of come in from the front and try and get like right in the middle of them. But remember, this is broad daylight, really calm seas. And they heard my engine, even though I was going really slow. They figured out where I was and they started depth charging me before I'd even managed to get a shot off. And I was going right past this destroyer, and it was near a merchant vessel. And I thought to myself, well, I'm going to be safe here because they won't launch depth charges near the merchant vessel. And then all of a sudden, like, because I was looking at it from the surface, like from an external camera, just watching the enemy ships move around, and I saw this huge explosion, like lift up, you know, all this white water just shooting up out of the surface of the ocean, and then like all these voices in German just start yelling, you know, and like I look at my boat, and there's all these different sections damaged, like on the sort of damage report, and water's flooding into the boat, so I have to get like a repair crew to start like fixing the damage. And we were pretty deep. We were about 80 meters when this happened, or 100 meters, like 100 meters deep, but they still nailed me with the depth charge. Usually they don't get the depth right, but this time they were like, it must've been a good crew or something. Like they were like on it. So we're taking on water and we start to like sink, and I can see like the depth gauge like starting to like go up and up and slowly, slowly, slowly. And I'm like panicking, like trying to get enough men into different compartments to like stop at the flooding. But there's just too much damage and too much water coming in. And like you just sort of you focus on one area and the other area is taking on water. And it was this horrible slow thing where we're going deeper and deeper. And then it was like, and I could see the gauge going into the red where it's like, this is where it's like,
you're going
to
die.
Be careful going to this depth because you might crush. And then it maxed out the depth meter. I couldn't go any further. And like we're in the middle of the Atlantic, so it's like 2 kilometers down. So we're going like, I don't even know how deep we were when it just exploded. Everything just went black. And they heard this like horrible, like crunching metal sound. Yeah. And then it's just like, boom. Yeah, that was one of the most traumatic ways I've died. I don't think I've actually like had a moment where I've died in the game and actually been shocked by it and sat, had to sort of sit back in my chair and for about half an hour after it, like I wasn't really right in the head because
but it's very immersive. And also, you know, given what's happened earlier this year with that other, other submarine,
right?
You're probably playing with like a place, like a, with an Xbox controller.
It was actually terrifying. Yeah. Like because it was black and I actually like, you know, I looked, I'd made the mistake of looking outside the, like in the external camera when we were going down and it was just like, I couldn't see anything. It was just pitch black. Terrifying. And I'm, you know, like, I personalized the people in the crew, you know, I picked their little character, their faces and stuff. And I was like, you know, sort of trying to sort of remember their names and things like that. And they're all dead. So that was awful. So my new game, I'm being much, much more cautious. Discretion is the better part of valor.
I like to, my new I like to think your last words were, damn you, Snowbogen. I don't know what that is in German.
Yeah. Side benefit, I've been learning a lot of German playing this game.
Okay. All right. This is probably going to start to become a problem soon. I really wish you'd stop goose-stepping around my house.
look, it is. It just happens to be like a really good simulator. But speaking of simulators, I see.
Have you been playing more Rob games? Because it sounds like you're on a Rob game roll at the moment.
So the other week, on Black Friday sales, I purchased for myself a joystick and a throttle. So a proper like HOTAS setup.
This sounds like a sex thing. Is this a sex thing?
No. To play flight simulator games. So I installed. Microsoft Flight Simulator, and I've been learning to fly. Is my latest hobby. So I only started doing that this week.
The dark side, which you turn to, there is no way back.
I haven't got the track IR or anything yet. I'm not like that far in the deep end.
Oh.
But if I fall in love with this, that's where it's going, I think. But
oh, no.
I'm still trying to learn how to fly. You know, it's tricky. But I did like takeoff and landing yesterday. You know, like the flight simulator is really good because it has like a good training introduction with it has like a flight instructor, and it's literally like learning to fly where they're flying with you and they go, okay, here you can have the controls, and then you like do little turns and things. And yesterday was the first time I did a proper takeoff and landing like by myself.
You are heading down the Elchan path of your return, I'm afraid.
I think I'm just getting into simming at the moment. I think like playing the sub sim made me go like, ooh, maybe I should check out other simulators. And then I watched this guy playing like World War II flight simulator games, and I was like, that looks so much fun. But I realized pretty quickly that like those games don't have good tutorials and I don't know how to fly a plane. So before I like jump into like a Spitfire or something and kill myself, I should probably learn how to fly in like a little baby Cessna, like, you know, like trainer aircraft. So I'm learning to fly. It's actually been really fun. Like the first time I got the game let me use the controls, I immediately plummeted out of the sky, which wasn't encouraging. And then it kept happening over and over again. I was like, why is the moment he gives me the controls, I'm immediately just nosediving? I realized that I had the trim setting wrong, so now I'm learning about trim. I had to adjust the trim on the elevator. This is all the lingo. So that I don't immediately plummet and instead like have a nice straight like flight. So I'm learning all this like flying stuff, I see.
It's kind of funny because like we're two opposite ends of the spectrum here.
Yeah.
Like I'm about the gamiest game that ever gamed a game. I'm about Super Mario Wonder. Where you can be any character, it can be as difficult or as easy as you choose with different exits. You're going, hardcore Sims.
Yeah.
I am the Germans, and now I am learning to fly the planes.
I'll learn to fly this plane, then I'm going to attack Britain. No.
The Battle of Britain shall be won by me this time.
I think if I do play a World War II flight sim game, I think I'm going to have to play as the Allies just to correct some of the damage, the digital crimes. Silent Hunter. It is pretty galling, like when you like blow a ship in half and like, and you see all the people like calling for help in the water and there's like oil all over the water and stuff. And you just like cruise past them on your submarine. I'm like, hey guys, you know, lucky for you, I'm not mean and I'm not going to machine gun you.
You can take solace in the fact that the sharks are going to finish you off.
Yeah. I'm a kind German U-boat captain. I won't machine gun you in the water. Anyways, I've been playing the flight, but I haven't been playing much flight sim, so I can't really talk too much about it, other than that I've just started, and it's fun, but I'm also, like, realizing how, spoilers, did you know this? It's actually pretty tricky to fly a plane. It's
yes, like, I know.
It's kind of hard.
As someone who used to live with someone who was obsessed with this, yes, I know exactly. I, like, because I'm such a, like when it comes to games, I'm very much like it's a gamey game. Like I played Flight Sims before and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But of course, as soon as you give me the controls, I'm going to make it into a game. And usually that game is Crash and Burn.
Loop the loop.
Yeah. Don't do that in a 747, turns out.
Oh, man, I can't wait for the 7. I'm actually terrified of flying an Airbus or something. They look so scary. Like, just flying my little Cessna is, like, scary enough, honestly. Like, trying to... I did such a bad job.
It's autopilot than a 747 or an Airbus does.
Yeah. So, that's been fun. But, yeah, so other games. Just very quickly, I downloaded Mafia Definitive Edition. So, that was... So, Mafia was a GTA clone that came out, like, on for GTA 3, and it was set in, like, the 1920s and 30s. And it was like plagued with issues, but it was a cool idea for a game, you know, but it was like they had all this ambition and it didn't quite achieve what it set out to do. And the sequels like Mafia 2 and Mafia 3 seem to be a bit more successful. But I never played those ones because they weren't set in the 30s because I like historical games, old timey stuff, basically. But then I realized just the other week that they'd really released like another remaster, but it wasn't just a remaster, it was like a ground up rebuild of the entire game.
Okay. I have heard about this.
Same plot and same missions and stuff, or like largely the same missions and largely the same plot, but like new voice actors and new everything's built new from the ground up, new engine. So like the driving feels completely different and stuff. And it's a very well realized little 1930s city. So I'm really living in the past at the moment, like between like World War II stuff and then like traipsing around like some sort of like Chicago-esque city in my little chee-chee bang-bang cars. It's been fun, like hitting people with baseball bats and Tommy guns and all that stuff. It's been fun. Like I will say it is still a flawed game. Like it doesn't do what GTA does. It doesn't give you this huge open world to explore. It's like mission-based in an open world, which is sort of frustrating because you want to explore the open world, but it's all missions. So you never really get a chance to go and check out the docks or something. The kind of stuff I would do in GTA Vice City, like just go and see, like drive a boat around for fun.
Yeah, yeah.
You just don't get to do that in this game. But it's pretty cool. And yeah, like historical, like a bit of a, what do you call it? A period piece. Yeah. It's very well realized and it's a very pretty game.
Oh, that's good. I was aware of those and like, I've never really been big into the organized crime mafia thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like looking at the historical accuracy, especially look, I come from a car family.
Mm-hmm.
I know what historically accurate cars look like because I've driven a lot of them.
I will say I got a great moment, a fist pumping moment playing Mafia because I was reading before I bought the game, I was reading the reviews on Steam and, heaps of people complaining in the comments, oh, the racing level sucks. Fuck that racing level. God damn. Like, one guy was like, I play driving games all the time, and that racing level was friggin' horrible. You know? Like, the worst ever. Like, I wish I could skip it. I played that. I beat that level first go, and I felt so good. Like, just immediately beating the level that I was worried about, like, leading up to it.
Well, it was probably because you have no experience in those other driving games.
You know what was funny? I was like, this is just like Mario Kart. And all my Mario Kart skills were, like, really immediately applicable.
Oh, God. There is no better way to piss off driving racing aficionados than to make it like a kart racer.
Right. Because, like, what was so funny to me was, like, it was a proper, like, old-timey, like, speed race, you know, with those cars that look like cigars with wheels.
A drag.
Race. Yeah, yeah. Man, it was really fun. But, yeah, I crashed one or two times and restarted, but I, beat the level pretty much straight away. And that felt really, really good. Anyway, Mafia, the last game I wanted to talk about, what was it? Oh, yeah, Baldur's Gate. So, I've also been playing Baldur's Gate.
Oh, you actually... Oh, well, it's a D&D game, I suppose.
Baldur's Gate 2, 3, whatever it
4?
Is.
4?
God damn, I don't even know. That's how bad I am. Everyone is screaming right now. I've been playing the new Baldur's Gate, actually, let's say that. I didn't play the old ones.
One of the games of the year, according to a lot of outlets.
It is very good, but what's funny is with all the simming and everything going on, I haven't been playing it as much as you might think. Like, you would think that this would be the game that would make Rob obsessed, you know, because it's like a D&D game. It's like you're rolling dice on the screen and it's sort of authentic to the D&D system and everything like that.
I think you're too far gone to be saved now.
Yeah.
You've gone to the sim side.
Maybe, but like I've been checking in on Baldur's Gate, but I've probably been playing like once a week.
Yeah.
Not like every night. It's funny how like...
And are you enjoying it though? Like, are you just playing it piece by piece and going, this is fun, but I'm not obsessed.
I'm enjoying it. I feel like it's... you know, it has the same limitations as any sort of any of those mouse-based clicky RPGs has. Like, it's a very confined little world that's all very neat and tiny, but breaks your immersion because you realize that, like, this is supposed to be a very big world, but it's basically like this little tiny sandbox that you click your mouse around in. And
yeah.
It sort of doesn't feel big the way that Skyrim or something. Like, Skyrim felt big, like you're in a big open world full of people and stuff. This feels like a little clicky sandbox, like an old school PC game.
I mean, it is the third or fourth in, you know, yeah, in a series of...
I mean, it's meant to be an old school key mouse PC game. I'm criticizing it for the thing that it's trying to do.
How dare you be the thing that you...
I just think I'm not really into those kinds of RPGs, but this is the best one of those I've played, and I really like it. But it's still ultimately, it's like, you know, if you don't like JRPGs, then even like the best JRPG will leave you feeling like, you go, okay, that's pretty good. But you won't be like, well, now I love JRPGs. Like, I still don't like this genre, but I'm like, appreciate it for what
it
is.
I love Persona 4, but I actually hate playing Persona 4.
Yeah, right? Is that kind of a thing? Like, I appreciate, like, the dialogue's great. The voice acting is amazing. I really like the group. Like, I really like a couple of the characters. Like, I've grown fond of them. Like, Shadowheart is, like, she's got such a weird outlook on the world that I enjoy. She worships, like, this god of destruction and death. And, like, she goes on missions. She doesn't even know why she's doing it, which is sort of like a religious fanatic, which is bizarre. But, like, getting to know her has been interesting, and getting into her head has been, like, interesting in a way. There's this, like, vampire elf guy who's... really
so do you control all of your party members?
You have your own character that you create. Okay. It's like, you know, you go through the character creation screen and make their nose big or whatever you want to do, you know. And then you have like, then there's set characters with like backstories and stuff that you encounter, and you build your party out of those. Like, I've met like seven or so people, but I've got three that I like to roll with, and I'm sort of maining those guys. And they're kind of the mean slash bad characters. The character I made is a crime wizard. So I made him a wizard, then I gave him a bunch of skills that are kind of appropriate for a rogue. So he kind of branches between wizard and rogue, and all his spells are like open locks, invisibility, like things that would be useful
I'm
for
picking
like...
picking up a lot of a bit of a pattern with the games you've been playing, like Nasty Boy.
I just like that. I think that is that
I just like being silent in the water with no one suspecting that I'm about to totally torpedo their armor with magic.
I just think it's like, I just enjoy, because I'm not like this in real life. Like, there's something in fun about like doing nefarious things in video games, you know, because I'm never going to do that in real life. So like getting like being in the mafia or like torpedoing a ship, or like, it's stuff that I would never do in real life. So I think that's probably why I'm drawn to it. Why I tend to be a bit of a jerk whenever games give me an option to be an asshole to people. I tend to take it, because it's like, I would never say this to someone in real life.
You're like that, and I'm like, I want to be Princess Peach because she floats.
Like, I remember when I was playing The Witcher 3 and I was, like, demanding money from everyone. I wouldn't help anyone at all unless they paid me. I was like, there'd be a monster attacking the town, and I'm like, where's the gold? Come on! And if they pay me, I'd be like, see ya.
I'm going to be a benevolent princess in the game, but I'm going to be kind of an asshole in real life.
Funny, yeah. Yeah, it's sort of like we get what we don't have from our games, don't we? Mm. Anyway, that's been very lengthy. I knew that it would be.
All right, so what's been going on in your so-called life? I say that every time, and it's very enjoyable. You've just been busy like me?
Yeah, just busy, yeah. It's been a bit of a blur, honestly. A lot of medical stuff. My family keep hurting themselves and going to hospital and stuff. I wish they'd stop.
You should probably remove that spike pit out the front of your door.
It is a bit counterproductive. But I tell you what, when those bloody salvos come around, does the trick. Yeah, so I'll... Yeah, I've told them both they're banned from hurting themselves. So
how's that working out for you? Yeah,
it's great. Yeah, and you can't tell an 8-year-old not to hurt themselves. She's just remarkably good at doing it. The latest thing is like she swells up like a bloody swollen thing. I can't think of a good analogy. When she gets bitten by mosquitoes, and then she scratches the mosquito bite, and then she takes the top off it, and then it bleeds, and then it gets infected, and it's like this has happened like several times now. So anyway, she's a nightmare. Being a parent is great, but I'm really looking forward to going away. So we're the same day that you're flying to Japan, we'll be flying to the Gold Coast. Not as exotic as Japan, probably.
I don't know. There's some exotic people. There's some pretty exotic people in the Gold Coast.
I think it was like 90, it's like 50-50, like extremely attractive people and extremely unattractive people, you know. So, I think I'm fitting into the latter category. get the dad bod out on the beach there and horrify all the locals.
It's kind of like our version of Florida, though. There's like a whole bunch of retired old people who wanted to retire somewhere nice.
Yeah.
And then you got a bunch of unemployed bogans. And then you got a bunch of, like, you know, wannabe models.
Yeah.
And, like, actual successful people who are there to exploit the other two groups.
It should be fun. I've never actually been to the Gold Coast.
So never?
I've never done the whole, like, touristy Gold Coast
thing. Never been there?
No.
Oh.
I'm not missing Alan. I mean, everyone's like, oh, it's pretty tight.
I don't know. Like, I enjoyed the Gold Coast a few times that I've been to the Gold Coast. I've been to a movie where because I used to live in Brisbane and I visited Brisbane a whole lot.
Mm.
I've been, like, to Dreamworld several times, Movie World several times, Wet n' Wild several times, SeaWorld several times, although that got depressed. Like, the older I got, the more depressing SeaWorld got.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, I think my favorite after all these years is Currumburum Sanctuary, where they have all the birds and the wildlife, because I just really like birds.
Okay.
And they, like, you feed them, you have a handful of seed, and, like, they're...
Currumburum Sanctuary, okay.
Yeah.
That's the Gold Coast, isn't it?
It's the Gold Coast.
Oh, just, like, if I've got a spare day, I need something to do.
Yeah. You know, it's just nice. It's just pleasant. Mm-hmm. Like, because after you've done the big theme park, you know, you've done them, or, you know, you die. Which is unfortunately the reality of what happened in Dreamworld a few years ago.
Yeah, yikes! I'm a very timid man. AC. I'm not going to go on many rides. I think I might push myself to get on like a medium tier roller coaster or something like that. You know, I think medium tier is about as far as I can go. I'm not going to go on like the proper crazy one at Movie World.
Was it the Batman ride? I can't remember what it was. It used to be the one where you hang off the roller coaster rather than being in like on. It's like a you're hanging off it rather than being on top of it.
No, I'm not a thrill seeker. I get my thrills in video games, but not in real life. In real life, I'm a mild and timid, mild-mannered
Rob versus Nazi Rob in video games. Robert the Asperg.
Arno Asperg. You can't go past it, really. Yeah, yeah. Looking forward to so we're having a week in Gold Coast and then a week in Griffith in New South Wales with Joe's family for Christmas and New Year's. So, should be really nice to get out of town for a couple of weeks and blow off some steam. It's been a very long and tiresome year in many ways.
Yes, so, I think for everyone concerned.
Not a lot of moments of, like, achievements. Or anything. It just felt like a slog, you know? Yeah.
I think we've all been working towards just the end of this year, just for a slight reprieve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So looking forward to that.
Of life, like of what we've been going through this year. So.
Seriously. Well, I hope the listeners have a nice reprieve.
Yes, enjoy indeed. Your holidays. And now here's a surprise quiz from Rob.
About that.
I knew he didn't have one, so I thought I'd make him feel awkward on the spot.
I'm worried that, like, this is probably two in a row I haven't done a quiz now. Maybe three.
I can't remember.
So I need to do one sooner or it's going to fall away forever, I think, actually.
That's right. We're going to get to a stream of nonsense and you'll go, I don't have to do one. Phew.
I think I need a new quiz format or something because I'm getting bored of the one. You know, we've all done heavy metal band or first-person shooter. We've all done Simpsons or SimCity or whatever.
Simpsons or SimCity.
Yeah, I need a new one. So I got to mix
it. They're all good concepts, but, you know, we have done 112 episodes of this.
Yeah, The well runs dry eventually, guys.
Yeah. All right, everyone. We hope you have a happy holidays, Merry Christmas.
Happy Hanukkah.
Yeah, happy Hanukkah.
Good enjoy news. Your KFC, Asian people.
Yeah. shit, that's where I'm going for Christmas Eve.
Heck yeah. I mean, I'm kind of jealous, honestly. All right. Yeah.
Have a good one. We're ending on we're having a drink on a Friday night. And we hope you have one too, whether it be water or alcohol. Or whatever Nazis drink, I suppose. What is that, Rob?
Schnapps.